I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome back to Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
You've got your part down perfectly. Yes. Well, so we're talking about a very interesting topic tonight. Now, our kids are grown, but we've got grandkids, and it's an interesting time to be raising kids. I think every parent says that all of the time and has probably said that generation upon generation. But we both read a book recently that we want to talk about and talk about in the context of parenting and relationships and so forth. The book is called, I'll make sure I have everything correct. So if you see me looking at a note, you'll know why. It's called The Anxious Generation. That part I have easy. How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness by an author named Jonathan Haidt, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, H-A-I-D-T. And we will put the link to the book in our notes, our show notes. But it was really, really eye-opening for me in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. What did you think overall? And I don't want to ask you a bunch of questions, but what did you think overall about the book?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good book. I thought it was scary in a lot of ways to sort of hear this information. As a mental health person, I have seen the rise of mental health issues in people and kids, specifically the anxiety increase. And for me, it answered a lot of the questions that I've had about why are, you know, kids coming in, even adults coming in with more anxiety, more depression. And there was another book that I read called Lost Connections that was also an excellent book that talked about somewhat similar concepts of that we're disconnected from people. The way we used to be was much healthier. So yes.
Well, the statistics support that. You can, you don't need to be me to look them up. You can see that the anxiety levels in the average teenager match those of people who were treated for mental illness as adults, you know, 20 years ago. And it's staggering and it's scary. And, and what this guy, Jonathan Haidt, says, he says there's main contributors to this anxious generation. The first one, which I think is really interesting, and we've got grandkids who participate in events and so forth, is what he calls the decline of free play. In other words, you know, when you and I were kids, I remember specifically, you know, I'd come home from school, I'd get on my bike, and I would just go. It didn't, you know, there was nothing scheduled. We went and we did, right?
Yes. So yes, we are definitely more scheduled than we used to be. And kids have lost their freedom, to be able to go out and do things. And one of the big concepts about the book right now for me that really hit home is that we are overprotective for our kids in the outside world and not protective enough in the virtual world.
Well, as usual, you're getting ahead of our discussion.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about that. We're talking about the virtual world in a minute, but I'm going to talk about this free play concept, because what he says specifically is that kids who are not outdoors doing things that are not scheduled, their brains are not developing correctly, adequately.
Correct. Yes. A free play, and free play comes with problem solving, and free play comes with figuring out how to get along with people. And this is a great example. So we were with our granddaughter last week, and we played hide and go seek with her, and there was three adults playing with the one little girl. So she played mostly on teams, and then at the end she asked, I'm gonna you guys hide and I'm gonna find you,
right?
And it was adorable because she really had trouble finding us, but I got
she's
to
not see, a good finder so, better hider not a good finder
so I got to see. I had been reading this book and kind of processing the information, and I saw firsthand some of the things that happened. So when she couldn't find us. So she was going around looking for the things. I could hear her self-talk, which was, wow, I can't find them. They're nowhere. They seem to be gone, right? So she was processing yeah. some of the things. And then I think she did get a little bit anxious, like, oh my God, am I here by myself? I'm only 4 years old, right? Like she didn't say I'm only 4 years old, but I'm thinking about like how her brain, and I got to hear how her brain was working. But then I also saw her problem solving and then realizing that once she found us, that she like lived through that moment of being by herself and that she was now okay.
Right.
So I saw firsthand like what a simple game of hide and go seek did for her. And now she's probably like a little bit more confident in life, right? And she problem solved things like, where are they? Where should I look? Oh, I have to look again.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I think organized events and sports are good things mm-hmm. overall for kids. I mean, being part of a team is a good thing. But when that's all your mm-hmm. kids are doing, I think it causes this issue that he's talking about. And also it can cause stress, you know, on the parental level, right? We've got to get from here, get from there, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely interesting. So then he talks about the rise, and I'm going to combine two together, mm-hmm. the rise of a phone-based childhood
yes.
and an online social life. Mm-hmm. And what I want to just toggle back. He noted that when it came to the free play, as a point of information, that free play started to decline mm-hmm. in the 1980s and really jumped in the 90s and has gotten significantly higher over the last 20 years.
Right, and got worse after 2007 when the first smartphone happened.
Right.
The phones where you could get apps, where you could play things, where it wasn't just like a flip phone,
right.
you know, with texting that was really hard to do.
He talks a lot about, it gives you a lot of statistics.
A lot of charts, PDFs and charts and all those kinds of things.
Higher incidences of depression, of anxiety, other mental health problems, kids on medication and so forth.
Yes. And specifically worse for girls.
Why is that, do you think?
Because I think that with a lot of the phone-based stuff, the social media, I think that girls are particularly more conscious and susceptible to peer pressure mm-hmm. and being left out of things and those mm-hmm. kinds of things. So he found statistically that girls, teenage girls, were more highly affected by we call it phone-based world that we now live in.
Right, the online social
The online virtual. When he says phone-based, he really is talking about phones and any kinds of screens. So computers, phones, video games, all of that he considers virtual phone-based play versus play-based, which is what we used to have.
You know, we spend some time on the Delaware shore, you know, and go to the beach some. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times it's a beautiful day, right? Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful day, and kids should be playing, and you see them sitting under an umbrella
with
a phone or tablet mm-hmm. instead of throwing a ball around or playing or jumping in the waves, stuff that I was always doing.
Absolutely. And and there's research about what the technology does to the brains. And one of the things that the author, is it Jonathan, says?
Yes, Jonathan Haidt.
is he recommends that kids do not get phones before high school.
We're going to get to that
yes.
too.
So I mean, honestly, I am addicted to my phone. I think a lot of adults are.
Right.
But the good news is that the adults, when we got the phones, our brains were mostly developed.
Right.
So that's why they sort of talk about that big shift from 2007 and people being exposed, you know, being younger, like middle schoolers or little kids and versus older people, like our brains have not changed that drastically.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, if all you're doing is looking at a screen and we talked about this, I think on one of our little, lives, you know, not lives, but one of our
podcast.
Or
yeah. We did No Tech 90.
Yeah. We did the No Tech 90, but we talked about the statistics about how many hours kids spend on screens and the damage that's being done to their brains. I mean, mm-hmm. even adults, it's interesting. You know, I grind my teeth, right? I have trouble sleeping.
Yes, I know you do.
So the doctor says to me, listen, you got to get rid of screens at nighttime. And that includes your Kindle. Oh. So turn it way, way down or go read someplace else because the screen, mm-hmm. you know, I guess stimulates the brain and makes yeah. it harder to go to sleep.
Yeah, the blue light stimulates the yeah. brain. Yes. Yeah. yeah. So you're really supposed to get off of all technology a half hour to an hour before yeah. bedtime. And I also think that if you cannot have your phone in the room, that is very helpful. Now, most people are using their phones to set their alarms and to be able to get up right. in the morning. But honestly, like specifically, if you have teens or kids, like they should not be having their phone. That's the other piece of the research out there is that kids are staying up later on their right. phones than they should be. And that we're the sleep deprivation is also causing issues with brain functioning. And I think that's a really big, issue. If you can create like a hub to charge devices and not have devices in the room, because I think kids are staying up late.
Well, we're going to get to some recommendations, but you already mentioned it, which is no, and we're talking about the no cell phone rule until a yeah. certain age. But so I want to jump to the last sort of big flag that he mentions, yeah. and that is. And you talked about it just a second ago, I told you we were going to get to it.
Yeah.
Less focus on the real world and yes. and lack of real world experiences, mm-hmm. lack of accepting responsibility, taking responsibility. And frankly, this is dumped more on the parents, allowing their children to learn responsibility.
Yeah. 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 And he actually talks about, I think he was doing a talk and he had an audience of kind of all age people. And he asked people born, born before 1970s to raise their hand. And he asked a question, when were you allowed to go outside and play by yourself?
Yeah.
And the average age was around 8.
Yeah.
And then when you got to the Gen X and the whoever's beyond that, the age increased to be like 12 or 14 years old before a kid was allowed to go out.
Yeah, but in fairness to the parents, the world is a very different place in 2024 than it was when I grew up in the 1970s. Oh, sorry, that makes me pretty old, but I mean, it was a very different world. I remember specifically, mm-hmm. okay, that I could come home from school, get on my bike, and I wouldn't show yeah. back up until well after dark. Whether if it was mm-hmm. in the summertime, could be mm-hmm. or springtime, could be 7, 8, 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. My parents, if they were worried about me, I didn't know it.
Right.
And it wasn't until something bad happened yep. in our area yep. where two girls were taken. That all of a sudden mm-hmm. people start saying, I need to know, you need to be back at a certain time. And yeah. we now live in a society yeah. where yeah. there's danger. There feels like there's mm. danger everywhere.
Yeah,
and it does make parents nervous. And I think that's appropriate.
Yes, it does. So two things I want to say about that. I want to say that is true. We need to be careful. But on the other side of the coin is that there's kids in social media on, a right. Snapchat, talking to people that they don't even know and being exposed to all kinds of pornography and other things.
Violence. Guns,
and there's
yeah.
there's no guardrails.
Right.
There's no guardrails. You can just check a little box that you're over 18 and you can get into any platform you want online. Right. So that's his kind of take is, okay, yes, there are things that are dangerous, but yes, there are things that are really dangerous that we're not even paying attention to. We're not monitoring it. The other thing is this is an interesting concept. And I've always thought about this is we used to tell our kids, not to talk to strangers, right? Like if you see a stranger, don't talk to them or whatever. And what we really need to teach our kids is not to talk to strangers, but to, with their gut, kind of, be wary of strangers, but then be able to process information around and figure out who is a good person, who is bad. Because if they get lost, you do need them to go and talk to a stranger, right?
I know, but it is, but look. It is a very difficult balance for parents in any generation. All right.
Yep.
All of us can look at stories and read books and look at true crime stuff and know what has mm-hmm. happened to kids who, went off the track, went somewhere here yeah. or there, or whatever. Now, of course, you're right. You also have issues with kids being online and mm-hmm. so forth, but mm-hmm. it is I'm not suggesting that parents are right or that he's wrong, but I am suggesting that there's more to it than just, we got to just give them more responsibility blindly and hope that everything works out great. I don't think that's the, that's
no, no, I don't think that's a thing, but I do think that, you know, letting kids, you know, like play outside more and then having some, you know, some more freedoms would be a good idea. And then also on the flip side, really limiting where your kids are going on the internet, how many hours they're playing Fortnite, or, you know, who they're talking to when they're playing Fortnite. I know that there was recently something bad happened on that Discord, which is a gaming kind of, channel that people use. But I think, you know, I think bad things happen everywhere. But I think this book was enlightening. It answered a lot of questions for me as a mental health professional as to why we're seeing, you know, more and more anxiety, more and more depression. And I also think that people are, that the more connected we come with, become with technology, the less connected we become in person.
Yeah, we've talked about
and
that.
And that's just huge. I mean, that is just a really big thing. And, you know, years ago, I wrote a blog about Starbucks and about how I didn't like the pre-order, the convenience of, you know, ordering in your app, because you just run in, you don't even say anything to anybody, you grab your coffee and go. Whereas in the old days, you go into Starbucks, you actually say hello to your barista, you leave them a little bit of a tip, you have a conversation with somebody in the line, and you've made a connection, and you've also not trained our brain that we need to get coffee like this. Like, we can wait a minute or two. We could, you know, like,
well, that's a whole nother, that's a very different discussion, but, but you're right. Now, the, one of the things I really liked about this book was that he came up with very, very concrete ways to try to help.
Yes.
And I want to go through a few of those. One you talked about, which is kids should not have smartphones until they get to high school. Period. End of story. And if they need a phone, you get them a flip phone or something that they need to call with, but no smartphones, no ability to access the internet on the run from a mobile perspective.
Right, right. So phones for safety, which would include, you know, something that's
Let's be, you know, and that leads to the second one, no phones in schools.
Oh, yes, which really big.
Yeah, it's and in Australia, I don't know if you know about this, but I did a little reading. In Australia, they have taken this rule, and many school systems in Australia have kids turn their phones are turned in, or they are not brought to school, or they're confiscated at schools.
Yep.
And look, folks, you know, I didn't have a phone at school. If I needed to get a call home, I went to the nurse's office, or I went to the office, and they called for me.
Right.
There's nothing that can be that emergent for a 12-year-old or an 8-year-old that you can't get a hold of them if you know they're in school.
Yeah.
Now, you know, again, people will say that things happen in schools and that it's because of cell phones in schools that lives have been saved, and some school shootings so forth.
Yeah.
So, but I think that rule as a general rule is a good rule.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah. No, I do too. And I think there's going to be a lot of pushback, obviously, from kids to give up their phones. But I do think that makes a lot of sense.
But, you know, once it's like making kids wear uniforms to school, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in public school. Then all of a sudden you get moved to private school and you got to wear, you know, khaki pants and a blue shirt.
Yeah.
You're irritated. You don't like it. You don't want to do it. 2 months later, you're just used to throwing on your khaki pants and your blue shirt or your checkered skirt or whatever the heck you're wearing.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it can happen. It requires backbone on behalf of adults, on behalf of people who are in positions of responsibility.
I think that's the trouble, is a lot of times kids get technology, whether it's a tablet, video games, or, you know, a phone, because parents are exhausted. And they're just given.
It's easier.
At dinner time, like when we would go to a restaurant, we would have to bring crayons. We'd have to play games and I Spy and whatever.
Yeah,
and now you just put the bluey on there and they're quiet.
Just sit there.
But I don't think that's good. They're not learning.
Right.
They're not learning how to behave in a restaurant. And they're not learning that you have to sometimes sit. Like, we're working with Archie. What do you say?
Archie's a dog, by the way. For those of you who don't know, he's an 8-month-old mixed rescue puppy who is chewing a bone at my feet. But yeah,
You're working with him on what? Waiting.
Yeah.
What do you call it? You call it sitting and being.
Yeah, sitting and being. Just being.
Just being.
Just being. Mm-hmm. So we don't get into dog training, but it's the same thing with kids. Just be a kid.
Yeah, just being, me.
Which does get to this last sort of mm-hmm. overriding theme, which I thought was override throughout the book, which is we as parents and as adults want to increase independence. We want to mm-hmm. increase free mm-hmm. play. We want kids to learn and take on responsibility. We want them to experience real life stuff. And as parents, we do not need to make their lives easy all of the time. And this harkens back a little bit. Remember Jeff Nelligan was on our show about a month or so mm-hmm. ago, and he had a book, My Four Lessons for My Three Sons.
Yes.
And he would, if you're out there, Jeff, you should read this book because it's right up your alley.
Yes, it is.
But stop making life easy because it isn't.
Yes.
It isn't.
And there's a quote that I can't quite think of the words are, which is you need to prepare your kids for the world and not the world for your kids.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great. I think it's true.
Did I get it kind of right?
I don't know if you got it right,
but you understand the concept, which I think a lot of people are like, watch out, here comes my kid. And that's not the way world works.
No, and if something goes wrong, we run over, we fix it. Yeah. We don't like this teacher, we get them to a different class. They're not happy with this person, we move them to a different desk.
Yep.
And what happens, right? That's what the kids learn. Yep. So when they grow to be adults.
Yep.
What happens when they can't face something? They got to call mom or dad.
Right, right. And another book that I will plug that is sort of along the lines of this is Dr. Amen's book, mm-hmm. which is called Raising Mentally Strong Children or Mentally Resilient Children, okay. which he talks a lot about what you're talking about, which is we've got to let the kids do the hard.
Right.
We've got to let them do the suck because that's how they learn. And the little small things are the things that help them when they get older.
Yeah, I mean, we, for those of you who don't know, we had a lot of issues with one of our kids and she caused a great deal of tumult and havoc in our house. And a lot of the time created a lot of significant problems, mm-hmm. not just between the two of us, but also for her siblings. But I do really believe, mm-hmm. particularly my second daughter and my fourth daughter, my oldest one isn't in the house quite as much because she was older and getting off to college mm-hmm. and so forth. But I think that those lessons mm-hmm. learned, mm-hmm. As hard as they were and as difficult as it was and just bad as it was in the moment, allowed them to learn skills that they might not have otherwise learned.
Yeah, problem solving skills and skills of life isn't fair, and also about mental illness and challenges in that way. So I think all of our kids have benefited from, a little bit of a rough growing up in some way.
I think so.
Anyway, we know this topic is really challenging. Yeah. We're not pretending like we have all the answers. We don't. And I have to say, in all honesty, I'm glad that my kids are grown because it's so hard out there right now. But like when I was reading the book, I was like, oh my God, thank God we didn't have these issues to contend with. But anyway, we'd love to hear your feedback about the topic and, We are the Bullets.
thebullitts.com is the website. We are at the Bullets on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, TikTok. Anything else? Did I catch
that? We have a Pinterest too, but we don't go on there that much.
We had a Pinterest.
Yeah, we do.
We hope that you folks enjoyed today's discussion and hope that you join us back. This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
All right. Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.